Greetings and good day. This is Striving to Thriving, your resource for using a multidisciplinary approach to reclaiming your life from chronic pain. I'm your host and certified health and wellness coach, David Hall. Today's subject describes acute pain mechanisms and how acute pain morphs into chronic pain. While pain is part of the human experience specifically designed to protect you, pain, if it becomes chronic, it can and does cause harm in most areas of life. The information in this episode might seem a bit technical, but don't worry. There's no test at the end. But what is important is that you grasp the basic concepts. For those of you in chronic pain, this podcast is for you. If you have topics of interest you want me to cover, shoot me an email at info@strivingtothriving.com and I'll make every effort to work it into the schedule where appropriate. All listeners are responsible for their own medical care, treatment, and oversight. The content provided in this podcast, including treatments, dosages, outcomes, profiles, advice, are for informational purposes only and does not constitute providing of medical advice and is not intended to be a substitute for independent professional medical judgment, advice, diagnosis, or treatment. This podcast series, Pain 101, is dedicated to the memory of Dr. Lisa Jo Stearns. Without her inspiration, this podcast would not be possible. Rather than starting the podcast with a recap of the previous episode, which is what I typically do, I'd like to share something with you. I got off the phone with a dear friend the other day, and he is for the first time suffering from what the medical community describes as high-impact pain. He described his pain as both extreme and debilitating, the likes of which this over 6-foot-tall man had never seen. I've known him for about 30 years. He's not a vulnerable man. He's the guy who lives for the opportunity to stand in the gap and does so while others watch or run away. This indomitable man is the one you want by your side if for some unfortuitous reason you find yourself in the streets of South Chicago after the sun goes down. Because his pain is relatively new to him, it has not yet made the transition from acute to chronic, which is the subject of today's episode. But now pain has consumed his life as fire does tinder or cancer does tissue. Yes, cancer pain is both extremely painful and deadly if not cured. While cancer pain destroys healthy tissues and kills its host, pain, especially chronic pain, continues only to wreck marriages. It ends successful careers. It causes the loss of one's identity and steals reasons for living. My hope and prayer for those of you listening is that you soon find those capable of helping you fight the demons of both acute and chronic pain. Our conversation prompted me to lead in with this plea. It is for those of you in pain for more than a month or two that you get immediate help from providers specifically trained in the treatment of chronic pain and the disease in which you struggle. In today's episode, I'll describe the normal acute pain cycle, its functions, and what we can do to alleviate it. I'll then explain how acute pain morphs into chronic pain. If you listened to my first introductory podcast, thank you and welcome back. If you're new to Striving to Thriving, I encourage you to listen to the first podcast as it summarizes what Striving to Thriving is all about. In that podcast, I introduce some concepts and areas we will cover in this first series called Pain 101. An important theme described in the intro is the importance of moving from striving to thriving. I spoke on how all pain is real, it's very personal, and quite complex. I described how acute pain has value, and it serves to protect you from noxious stimulus. In contrast, however, chronic pain serves no useful purpose. I also introduced the concept of establishing your own MDT, which stands for multidisciplinary team. Because of the multidimensional complexity of chronic pain, you need a team approach, because chronic pain affects all of an individual's biopsychosocial domains, thus requiring specialists or practices staffed with those competent in each of those domains. In upcoming podcasts, I'll cover techniques you'll want to use in interviewing and hiring those specialists you'll need when utilizing an MDT. research shows that a multidisciplinary approach provides the best individualized treatment plan that yields the best possible measurable outcomes. These outcomes are what help you transition or move from striving in pain to thriving in life. Now, unless you live in an area that has a facility, such as the Center for Pain and Supportive Care, Barrow Neurological, Cleveland Clinic, or the like, these places are staffed with multidisciplinary specialists. If you don't live in an area, you'll have to build your own team, and we'll deal with that in future podcasts. In this podcast, I'll explain acute and chronic pain mechanisms and causes. I'll introduce you to some terms that you should know that might help you better understand chronic pain, and equally important, be able to communicate with your providers in their terms. Now, I'll throw out a bunch of chemical names, but don't stress out. You don't need to worry about remembering them or memorizing them. Just focus on the concepts. The terms I do want you to remember that will be helpful are the concepts of peripheral and central nervous systems and peripheral and central sensitization. These are important in understanding what happens with the electrochemical conduction of pain through the nervous system. If you cut your finger or scrape your elbow, it results in a very sharp, painful, and immediate experience telling you something is wrong. And that is pain's function, to tell you you have injured yourself or have the potential of injuring yourself. It tells you to stop or avoid a particular act or situation. This kind of pain has two descriptors attached to it. The first term is, of course, acute, describing short-term pain. The second term is nociceptive, meaning it happens because you're stimulating pain receptors called nociceptors. These nociceptors send a direct signal to your brain. These pain receptors help you avoid painful situations so that you don't sustain or cause more tissue damage. There are other types of pain that last longer than 3 months, which is the definition of chronic, one of which is chronic pain associated with cancer. And we consider this as nociceptive pain because the cancer is continuously stimulating nociceptors, sending pain signals to the brain. But the most common type of chronic pain is that which we don't know what the stimulus is. There's no damage or unhealed tissue. There's no discernible stimulus exciting the receptors sending pain signals to the brain. You experience pain as though there is actual or potential damage, but there isn't. Any tissues that were injured in any acute trauma have healed after 6 to 12 weeks. So what's happening in this situation? What we now know is that chronic pain typically arises after an experience of acute pain, often when the pain was neither controlled nor well managed. What happens with chronic pain is that the painful stimulus amplifies itself and continues to do so. It amplifies itself so much that even after the initial trauma or damage has healed, pain still exists. Whether a cut, scrape, burn, bruise, or any damage, the trauma, whatever it might be, even though it no longer exists, the pain remains. This is called sensitization. In contrast, with all your other senses, sight, taste, sound, fine touch, the opposite happens, called desensitization. Think about when you wake up in the morning and you don your socks and shoes and you get dressed. How long do you experience the sensation of your socks and shoes? Maybe 15 seconds, maybe a minute. Then you don't notice them for the rest of the day. This is your brain's way of eliminating the superfluous in favor of the important. Your brain quickly and continuously monitors and favors those things most important at the moment. That's desensitization. Under normal circumstances, the brain activates many processes within the body to heal tissues, and within weeks or a few months, the brain becomes desensitized to the original injury. So when you experience pain from an injury or a surgery, your body, instead of modulating it down, it amplifies it, so you experience a lot of pain. The brain does this by design because it wants to protect you so you avoid any offending action or tasks so that you don't further harm yourself. Over time, everything settles down and you resume normal activities in life. However, with chronic pain, the sensitization process exacerbates. Instead of tapering down over time, it spins itself into a cycle. There's two types of sensitization involved with your pain experience. The first is peripheral sensitization. Peripheral sensitization describes the pain you experience at the site of injury or damaged tissue. The other classification of sensitization is central sensitization, and this takes place in the spinal cord and in the brain. Let's examine these two types of pain with a specific damage, like the trauma your skin experiences when you cut yourself with a kitchen knife, for example. Let's say I sliced one of my fingers open, opening a wound. I just damaged vascularized tissue. Now, what we know is that all tissues are connected to the brain via the nervous system. So the brain recognizes the damage of vascularized tissue and it causes inflammation. The four signs of inflammation are redness, heat, swelling, and pain. These four responses occur because blood vessels dilate, increasing the flow of blood, and blood flows out of the cut. Along with the blood flows other fluids containing some white blood cells and other cells that help fight infection. These include mast cells, neutrophils, macrophages, and T cells. These cells either engulf or surround the damaged tissue or a penetrating fragment like a splinter, or they spill their guts, releasing a multitude of pro-inflammatory chemicals in an effort to annihilate the problem at the site of injury. So lots of chemicals are produced and they come out in hordes. There's hundreds of them. On one side of the equation, you have hydrogen ions known as protons, serotonin, ATP, and substance P. At the same time, neurons release bradykinins, histamines, nerve growth factors, and prostaglandins. So I separate these two into two separate groups because these distinct types of chemicals have different effects on pain receptors at the site of injury. Now, the signals from the pain receptors in the cut finger ultimately go to the spinal cord and then onto the brain. But let's first consider what's happening at the pain receptors in the finger. Once these chemicals are released, for example, the hydrogen ions ATP, serotonin, and substance P, they bind to receptors on my pain nerves, the nociceptors in my finger. They open channels to let in positive ions, and these positive ions include calcium and sodium. So why is this important? Well, your nerves have a charge differential, or an electrical potential difference from the inside to the outside. It's negative on the inside of the neuron versus the outside. So what? Nerves or neurons have what we call resting potential. This means if you could use a voltmeter to measure the difference across the inside and outside of the neuron, you would measure about a minus 70 millivolt electrical differential. This is the electrical potential or electrical difference across the wall of the neuron. Now, if you have some positive ions like calcium and sodium flow through these channels, the electrical potential drops from a minus 70 millivolts to minus 65, minus 60, becoming more positive. But there's a threshold. As soon as the electrical potential changes from a minus 70 millivolts and hits the critical minus 55 millivolt threshold, a multitude of other channels down this neuron open up. They are sodium channels. Sodium rushes in and it sends an electrical signal all the way to the spinal cord. We call this minus 55 millivolt threshold an action potential, and that's how neurons send signals. So the only way neurons, including pain neurons, can send painful stimulus is that it must become more positive inside. The way this happens is the open channels send positive charge ions inside to carry the pain signals. So how do we open these channels? Hydrogen ions, ATP, substance P, and serotonin are neurotransmitters. They open these channels. Where do they come from? They come from the mast cells, T cells, neutrophils, and macrophages. These are special cells that surround the cut. When tissue sustains damage, these cells are all activated. But there are other chemicals too. These are bradykinins, histamines, nerve growth factors, and prostaglandins, or the other term for these are pro-inflammatory chemicals. These further sensitize the neuron, making it even easier for the pain neuron to become positive inside. That means it makes it easier for the neuron to send pain signals. So instead of a neuron having a normal, healthy resting potential of minus 70 millivolts, the excess of positive ions now in the neuron, it rests at a minus 60 millivolts, only 5 millivolts away from that minus 55 millivolt threshold. Now, because the resting potential is at minus 60 millivolts, it takes only a minuscule amount of positive ions to get into the neuron, resulting in sending pain signals. But we're not done. The neurons themselves release chemicals when stimulated. These are neurogenic inflammatory chemicals. They include, again, substance P, a chemical CGRP, which stands for calcitonin gene-related peptide, cytokines, and chemokines. Cytokines and chemokines. They further stimulate this inflammatory process yet again. It all happens in a cyclical manner. It intensifies itself. The process continues, and you continue to get pain stimulus until you stop the initial cause. Once you stop or eliminate the initial cause of pain, the cyclical release of positive ions should stop and the pain should subside. Anytime you get a painful stimulus, you need to do whatever you might to stop that pain. That means stop what's causing it. If after removing the source of the acute pain stimulation and pain remains, you might take some non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs or NSAIDs or some anti-inflammatory drug prescribed to you by your practitioner. This cycle just described is called peripheral sensitization, as the source of the pain resides outside the central nervous system, your spinal cord, and your brain. Let's examine what's happening once the pain travels to the spinal cord. It transmits the information to a second pain neuron in the dorsal gray horn of your spinal cord. The communication between the two neurons takes place across a small, tiny gap called the synaptic cleft, or just synapse. So the signal goes through my finger, hand, arm, to my spinal cord, and transmits to the next neuron across this synapse. The next neuron routes to the other side of the spinal column and travels up to the brain, where the brain processes the incoming message, analyzing the threat to the body, and then tells you you're experiencing pain. Now let's examine what's going on in the gray horn, where we see what's happening in the synapse between the first pain receptor and the second pain receptor. We consider the first neuron, the speaking or transmitting neuron, to the second stimulating neuron. The first neuron releases several chemicals. These include glutamate, which is an excitatory neurotransmitter, substance P, also an excitatory neurotransmitter, and again, CGRP, which we spoke of earlier, along with the cytokines and chemokines. You don't have to remember the names of these chemicals. But what is important is that you recognize what they do. That is, they bind to the receptors on the second pain neuron, and they open up the channels on the second neuron. This lets positive ions flow into the calcium and sodium channels, stimulating the action potential and continuing to send the signal to the brain. Because this reaction takes place in the spinal column, we refer to this reaction as central sensitization. There's a couple things happening here. Near the synapse are glial cells. These are supporting or facilitating cells. Glial cells are like star-shaped cells having arms or tentacles that reach out and maintain the microenvironment where these two neurons exist. When they sense a signal is being sent, the glial cells are stimulated and they release even more cytokines, further exciting and amplifying the signal at the synapse. This amplified stimulation at the synapse of each neuron is why the pain signal does not attenuate or weaken as it travels to the brain. Now here's the problem. If peripheral and central sensitization, if they both continue over time, even if you stop the peripheral sensitization at the source of the pain, the little microcircuit or microenvironment within the spinal cord can continue to amplify itself. This means, even without a known stimulus outside the spinal column, chronic pain central in the spinal cord can continue to occur. The reason is that some of these substances at the synapse drop the electrical threshold so low that it facilitates pain signal transmission. If this process continues, the threshold becomes so low that even normal touch can signal and stimulate pain receptors. Under the right conditions, a normal touch signal, like fingers rubbing across the arm, can cause extreme pain and will continue to exacerbate. We call this condition allodynia. The important thing to remember is that normal functions like walking, bending, touching, twisting, reaching, and even light touch can cause pain signals, and this can happen for many years. This is the fundamental reason chronic pain occurs, is because the system gets spun up into a hyperactive state and never calms down. I talked about the technical what's and how's of how acute pain becomes chronic. Pain, with all its accompanying struggles, unfortunately, is part of the human condition. Like many major life trials, you're not meant to travel through them alone. Those struggles are far from trivial, physically and emotionally. The emotional struggles sometimes rear their ugly heads at the most inopportune times, and we find it uncomfortable to talk about these things that make us vulnerable or appear weak. We'll go to great extents to avoid the mention of them, as they reveal our perceived weakness to those closest to us. So we put on a mask. We pretend. All the while, turmoil destroys the core of our being. If you're struggling with chronic pain and not experiencing the joy you know your life should have, reach out to me and let's discuss some coaching options to help you transition from striving to thriving. You can rest assured that we will engage appropriate professionals when needed in those areas that you struggle the most. Ultimately, jointly, and collaboratively, we'll come up with a treatment plan that's individualized to your specific needs. Together, we'll explore options and steps that you can take to reclaim your life from chronic pain. Send me an email and we'll get something scheduled. That email address is info@strivingtothriving.com. Allow me to close with a quote by Mr. Rogers, Fred Rogers, of the host of the children's television show that has stood the test of time. He said, "Anything that's human is mentionable, and anything that is mentionable can be more manageable." When we talk about our feelings, they become less overwhelming, less upsetting, and less scary. The people we trust with that important talk can help us know we're not alone. I'm David Hall. This has been Striving to Thriving. And until next time, be kind to yourself.